Welcome to the Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, December 4. Hello again, Orion Samuelson with you, and this time back home in the Midwest after spending the 2 weeks around Thanksgiving at our studios in Scottsdale, Arizona. But it's good to be back in the Midwest, despite the fact that I saw snow that fell during my absence. We didn't see any snow in Arizona, and had a blessed Thanksgiving vacation out there, and hope you had a joyous Thanksgiving, and now we're all looking forward to Christmas, and retailers particularly are looking forward to Christmas. What happened this week? Well, just about everything. As I take a look, first of all, at Wall Street, Thursday, the S&P 500 posted its biggest drop since September, and that happened because the European Central Bank did not make as many moves as traders on both sides of the Atlantic thought they would. They continue their economic stimulus program, but the interest rate cut of 0.1% did not come up to anybody's expectations. And as a result, we saw the dollar weaken sharply, and the S&P 500 suffering its biggest daily drop since late September. And the European Central Bank move triggered a spike in the euro that caught investors by surprise yesterday, forcing them to shift positions. That affected many asset classes, and bond prices dropped after the announcement. And something else that we watch in the marketplace when we have disappointing reports, the volatility index at the CBOE. We call it the worry factor. It's called VIX. It's the market's fear gauge. And it jumped 13.8% yesterday, closing at its highest level since November 17th. The European Central Bank cut its deposit rate deeper into negative territory, extended its asset buys by 6 months as expected, but that wasn't quite as good as a lot of traders were expecting. Then comes today. We get a report today from OPEC meeting in Vienna. I'll talk about that in a moment. But the stock market, after posting the biggest S&P 500 drops in September, really roared back today. And we saw a 2% gain today on Wall Street as stocks rallied, giving the S&P 500 its biggest gain since early September. And U.S. jobs data suggested the economy was strong enough to sustain a Federal Reserve hike this month. Financials, which of course do benefit from higher borrowing costs, led the rally, the S&P Financial Index up 2.7% today. J.P. Morgan Chase, for example, went up over 3% after European antitrust regulators dropped charges against the bank on blocking exchanges from derivatives markets. But the rally today, which followed 2 days of sharp losses, included most sectors, allowed the three major indices to post slight gains for the week. For the week, the Dow and the Nasdaq were up 0.3%, while the S&P 500 was up just 0.1%. But the Dow Industrial Average today went up 369 points. That's more than 2%. It ended the week at 17,847. And the S&P 500 gained 42 points, a little more than 2%, to end the week at 2,091. The NASDAQ composite today added 104 points, also a little more than 2%, and it will start next week at 5,142. So what was the reason? Well, first of all, Fed Chair Janet Yellen struck an upbeat note on the economy yesterday when she testified before lawmakers, saying how it had largely met the criteria for a rate hike, and the Fed's policy setting committee will meet on December 15th and 16th, and all of the analysts nearly are saying we'll make a little bit of history. on those dates because it'll be the first time in 10 years that the Fed has raised interest rates. Another performer in the market today that surprised some people, Avon Products, rose nearly 6% to $4.22 a share after a private equity investor group led by Barrington Capital proposed a restructuring of the cosmetics maker. And it was a busy trading day on Wall Street today. About 7.7 billion shares changed hands on U.S. exchanges, compared with the 6.9 billion daily average for the past 20 trading days, according to data from Thomson Reuters. So all in all, a pretty good end to the week. And the reason that it really went that way, the unemployment report, or I like to call it the employment report, that's a little more positive. But the report issued today at 7:30 showed that employment increased at a healthy pace in November, and non-farm payrolls rose 211,000 last month. But in addition to that, September and October data revised to show 35,000 more jobs than previously reported. The unemployment rate held at a 7.5-year low of 5% as people returned to the labor force in a sign of confidence in the jobs market. And now the jobless rate is in a range that many Fed officials see as consistent with full employment and has dropped 0.7 percentage points this year. Harm Bandholz, who is chief U.S. economist at UniCredit Research in New York, said, and I quote, "The employment report should remove the final doubts about a rate hike at the December meeting. The clear message from the labor market to the Fed is just do it." The chair of the Federal Reserve, in her report to the lawmakers on Capitol Hill this week, said the economy needs to create just under 100,000 jobs a month to keep up with growth in the working age population. The U.S. dollar firmed against the euro after European Central Bank President Mario Draghi said in New York today that the ECB could deploy more stimulus if needed. But the second month of a strong job gain should really put to bed fears the economy has hit a soft patch after reports showing rather tepid consumer spending in October and a slowdown in services industry growth in November. Manufacturing contracted in November for the first time in 3 years. And the strong U.S. dollar and spending cuts by energy companies have been headwinds to the economy. A separate report from the Commerce Department today showed the international trade deficit widened in October as exports hit a 3-year low. Payroll gains happened today, though. Wage increases slowed last month, but economists say that was mostly payback for October's bigger-than-expected gains, driven by a quirk in the calendar, and average hourly earnings increased 4 cents, or 0.2% from a 0.4% gain in October. Other labor market measures watched by Fed officials were mixed, but the employment gains in November were broad-based, though manufacturing did drop 1,000 positions, and factory employment has declined in 3 of the last 4 months. But the segment of our economy that is really hurting is the mining industry. Mining lost 11,000 jobs in November, with oil and gas extraction losing 2,400 positions. Mining employment has now dropped by 123,000 since reaching a peak in December of 2014, a year ago. And three-quarters of the job losses over this period have been in support activities for mining. Oil field services provider Schlumberger this week announced another round of job cuts in addition to the 20,000 layoffs already reported this year. But the construction industry, up 46,000 last month, the largest gain since January of 2014, and retail jobs rose 30,700. Transportation and warehousing employment rebounded after two straight months of declines. But I did get a little closer look at this oil situation this week. I spent this week in communities in Minnesota speaking for the AgStar Bank in Minnesota. And today, as a matter of fact, I was in Worthington, Minnesota for a noon meeting attended by about 240 to 50 farmers. But they're close enough to the North Dakota oil patch that they're seeing the impact now as workers in the oil patch are coming back to farm jobs, taking a look at what opportunities there are outside the oil community. And it really is taking its toll. But I guess maybe North Dakota gets used to it, but I'm not sure, because this now is the second oil boom and bust situation in about 30 years. But now let me talk briefly about oil. Oil prices fell today after news that the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, planning to maintain its production near record highs despite depressed prices as OPEC continued to guard its share of an oversupplied market. The producer group failed to agree on a new production quota, allowing member countries to continue pumping more than 31 million barrels of oil per day, just adding to the global oversupply of oil that has depressed oil prices for over a year. OPEC's announcement sent ripples through wider markets and dented shares of U.S. energy drillers already suffering from low prices. Brent crude ended today down 84 cents, nearly 2%, at $43. U.S. crude down $1.11, 2%, below $40 now at $39.97. One analyst said there was some short covering before the announcement in case there was a production cut. When we found out that was not the case, we gave up the gains. Saudi Arabia has really been under pressure from OPEC's poorer members to cut output to move prices higher because they've dropped from over $100 a barrel since June of 2014. And I've talked to some oil analysts who think we could see crude oil drop to $20 a barrel before it turns around. But one analyst also said the heavy pressure on non-OPEC producers, especially U.S. shale oil producers, is going to be maintained. You know, when they started to increase production in some of the richer OPEC countries, they said one of the gains was to lower crude oil values to a level that would make it difficult for U.S. shale oil producers to maintain production. And that's kind of the case that's been happening. U.S. energy firms this week got oil rigs for the 13th week out of the last 14. And Goldman Sachs analysts, which expect OPEC production to remain slightly above current output at 31.8 million barrels per day next year, said that robust supply could keep prices of oil low until the fourth quarter of next year. So OPEC said no to production cuts, and oil prices took a dip today, as you just heard. Well, what's happening in the agricultural community? Max Armstrong this week sits down with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services to talk markets, what could be ahead for the holiday trading session. Stay with us when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Archer Financial Services, the firm. Greg Groh is the guy joining us at the microphone this weekend. It is always good to see you. Hope your holiday season is going well thus far, sir.
Very good so far, Max, and I hope the same for you.
Thank you. It is. Does it tend to be at a quieter time in the commodity trade? I mean, I can think of years that there may have been some big stories developed during the holidays that moved the markets one way or another, but typically do you see the volume fall?
And I think this year especially, commodities are somewhat out of favor in the money world, as we all know, as we watched the declines in these markets over the last year and a half. And I think that, coupled with the holiday environment, reduces volume and makes things somewhat choppy at times when markets do move.
We saw some activity related to the dollar in recent days, and that was reflected a little bit, was it not, in some gyrations in commodity prices?
Certainly, it's a background story, and when we see the dollar strengthening near recent highs or five-year highs or eight-year highs, that kind of takes its toll on U.S. commodity values, as it makes it harder for us to compete in the global market. And days when the dollar drops, certainly it brings a little more interest back on our side and makes things more competitive on our side. So it's an interesting type of a situation, and the recent dollar strength has been one of the negatives in the commodity world in general here in the U.S.
Is the Fed poised to move interest rates, and when they do, will it affect commodities?
Well, that's been the big thing all year, is when is the Fed going to move? And from my perspective, a 0.25% increase, it really doesn't mean much in the nearby, but it does set the stage for further rate increases as we go forward. And if we've truly turned the tide and the U.S. economy is strengthening to the point where the Fed feels it can begin a tightening process, certainly it will have effects on things as we go forward. But, I think the economic news that we see each week is very highly variable week to week. And even though the Fed may move here at the end of the year, what they do next year is, I think, a bit of a up for grabs.
This first step, if they do take it, indeed, as many expect, and as the Fed seems to be quietly signaling, it may not necessarily be followed by another uptick when the Open Market Committee meets in 2016.
I would agree with that. I think they'll have to wait and watch and see events in Europe, how China stimulates and what happens there. I think they're going to take a very patient and concerted view at this.
In terms of global supply and demand, the demand, as we're watching it, China continues to buy soybeans, do they not?
They are. They've been aggressive here in the U.S. We were pretty competitive. Events in Brazil and uncertainty there has reduced some of the offerings coming out of Brazil recently, and that's brought more business here to the U.S. It'll be very interesting to see. Right now, we're just beginning the heart of the growing season in South America. It's just like being here on June 1st in North America. China is a global player in this. They're going to watch events there very closely. If weather cooperates and high yield potential is there by January, I expect that'll reduce U.S. demand, as China will tend to favor South American supplies going from that point forward. But if a weather upset occurs and yield potential begins to decline there, we may see additional business here out of the U.S. We are a very reliable supplier. And remember, despite the propensity for a giant crop in South America, the ability to get it from the field and onto a boat is a different story. And that has been a backdrop here for many years. For those who look at the South American supply as being a very bearish situation, we have to remember it takes time to get it into the marketing channels.
We heard a little bit of talk in recent days about the fact they've had only scattered showers across the major soybean-producing area of Mato Grosso in Brazil, and that was after a dry November. I guess it's a little bit too early for excitement over that, but it bears watching?
It is worth watching. That northeast part of the country has been dry. The south has been, in some cases, way too wet, so it's uneven. Generally, conditions across the country outside of that dry area are mostly favorable, but they're going to need good rains in late December and early January to ensure crop yield potential there. And the same thing as we go into Argentina. Situation there is good. Moisture is good. Planting progress is well underway, but they're going to need the type of rain that we like to see in July and August frame of things. It'll be late December and January there. The weather will be very important and will set the stage.
Do you sense that there is any immediate switch of acreage taking place in Argentina after the runoff election that they had at the presidency and the removal of some of those export taxes?
Reading some of the comments coming from there, it appears that they're going to come back and maybe plant 10% more acreage in corn and wheat than maybe had been anticipated early. Remember, up until the election, it was all about cost in corn, a high cost item there for producers, made them want to favor soy. But with the election and the December 10th talk of dropping the export tax there on wheat and corn, I think it's going to bring back some wheat and corn acres for Argentina this year.
Soybeans, no immediate effect there?
I don't think so. I think they'll have the type of acreage base there that the USDA suggested in their early outlook for Argentina. We may find that soybean acres on the margin will drop a little bit as we pick up some corn and wheat acres, but I don't think it's enough to really alter the overall potential for a soy crop in Argentina.
Long term, though, I mean, this seems like it's a very significant shift in that country that has tremendous potential. If I picked up on the vibes correctly from the farmers there with whom I visited as this year began when I was traveling there, they were just hoping against hope that they could get some kind of a change in the presidential palace.
Well, I think long term it's going to increase the ability for Argentine farmers to be more aggressive in marketing, which will, in the case of corn and wheat, make them very competitive against the U.S., and that'll be a question for us maintaining market share, especially if the dollar continues to strengthen this year. The Argentine growers are holding on to, in some cases, a year or maybe 2 years' worth of crop there, and that's going to start to come to town here pretty quick, and that's going to be a competitive influence in the world market, especially in corn and wheat.
So they have quite a bit stored.
My understanding is that they've stored at least one full year and perhaps in some cases two. Uncertainty there makes the Argentine producers, the ownership of corn and wheat and beans in storage is their store of value. Helps to maintain a sense of wealth that they cannot be taken by currency fluctuations and government policies. So, if the a more of a pro market government exists and makes the type of moves that the farm sector believes are important to them, I expect it'll make create a more aggressive marketing situation and allow Argentine growers to re-enter back into the global marketplace.
In terms of significant USDA numbers in the weeks ahead, what reports are you anticipating that you'll be watching for some guidance?
Well, this is kind of a slow period. We have a slight supply-demand report next week, and I don't expect a lot of changes. The next major report for us is in January, the final crop report. And when we see the type of yield increases we saw late season this year going into our November crop report, generally we'll see a steady to slightly higher yield on that January final report. So hard to come up with anything here in December that's going to be a big mover in the market. We've had a nice recovery here in soybeans recently due to this Chinese buying. It'll also kind of start to mesh a little bit with probably increased U.S. producer selling as we start into the next new year.
Farmers certainly need to watch for those signals anytime they get an uptick in price.
This is the type of environment, and I'll continue to believe, as I've had throughout this last year, that when we do see rally attempts in the market, for whatever reason they are marketing opportunities here for U.S. growers, as we are sitting in generally surplus positions on a global basis, and we need to be able to compete.
Thanks, Greg. Always good to talk to you. Come back and see us sometime.
Thank you, Max.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We look at agricultural production and agricultural trade. I can report personally that after spending time with farmers in Minnesota this week at three different speaking engagements, and next week I'll be in Menominee, Wisconsin, and four other communities in Minnesota to meet with farmers again, producers of grain particularly in pretty good shape from the standpoint of production, and not such good shape, though, as far as prices are concerned. And we're looking at a prediction on U.S. net farm income for 2016 being down sharply. But I was asked today by one person who was not a producer in agriculture what I was sensing in the mood of farmers. Well, disappointment, first of all, because when you cut commodity prices by 50% in some cases, you're not going to feel really happy about that. But I'm not hearing as much depression as in other times when we've seen agricultural commodity prices drop lower. So it was interesting with the kind of a crop they had in Minnesota this year that they can still be in a pretty good mood. One of the things, though, that Mike Pearson, who is appearing on the program with me from Public Television's To Market to Market, he's talking market strategy, and he's saying that it could be a downtime until 2017 or 2018. He said before we could begin to see a recovery that would be meaningful. Cattle producers, my golly, have they been getting hit hard, and that was certainly the case again this week. The word that I'm hearing from a lot of livestock analysts is people who produce feeder cattle are going to be hurt the hardest on this one. As we saw, the feeder cattle trade lower today, live cattle traded lower today, and the lean hog contracts ended the day mixed. But CME Group plans to change to its rules for live cattle futures by requiring that all cattle delivered against the contract must be born and raised only in the United States. So keep that in mind when we begin that kind of trading. So where do we start next week with market prices? Well, we're going to, first of all, look at where we'll start in livestock futures. And December lean hogs, down to $1.37 a hundredweight today. We'll start the week at $56.97. The December live cattle will start the week at $123.95 after dropping another $1.75 today after some sharp losses earlier in the week. January feeder cattle down 95 cents for the day, and so those prices will start the week at $158.80 a hundredweight. Board of Trade, though, we ended with a green screen today. We found December wheat. December wheat had a pretty good week, really, rallying from some major lows. December wheat gained 5.5 cents today to start the week next week at 471.25. December corn gained 6 cents today. It'll start next week at 376.25. January soybeans back above $9 and ending at $9.06 a bushel after gaining 8.75 cents today. Much of the rally in soybeans came in oil today that helped soybeans. Soybean meal, on the other hand, went the other way. But back to my comment, today was the kind of a day that was a great Cessna flying day. As many of you know, I do a lot of my travels around the Midwest in a Cessna 210. And today was probably the most perfect December kind of a day you could have in that part of the country that I visited. I flew from Chicago to Worthington, Minnesota in the southwest corner of the state, and did not see a cloud in the sky for the entire day, and a slightly warmer temperature. But I would have to say today was one of the most beautiful December winter days I've experienced. And in the western part of Minnesota, they still have a pretty heavy snow cover after last week's snow. And as I looked down at that white blanket, I kept thinking, we have to run machinery over that field at least 3 times, sometimes 4. And how much fuel does it take in the United States to produce food when you sit there at 4,500 feet and as far as you can see, it's flat farmland? Really, we do live in a country that lets us produce greatly. We're out of time. On behalf of Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson saying thank you for joining us this week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.